Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Over the Cap podcast. It's June 11th, 2021, and this is Jason Fitzgerald. You can find me on Twitter at Jason_OTC, or find my ramblings over at overthecap.com during the course of the week, whenever we've got some time to post some stuff. I think this week I put something up about restructures, which we'll talk a little bit about tonight, because I think that's the main topic that I really wanted to cover. You know, you can start real quick just with the Julio Jones news, I guess. So we'll start with that, and then I'll take that and just lead it into, I think, the topic that kind of, I think, has, I'm not going to say dominated the news, but I think has popped up in a lot of circles again in the last week. And that's this whole talk of the salary cap kind of being fake. So I thought that might be a good topic for tonight. And then we'll get into the typical Twitter Q&A kind of stuff. And then we'll call it a night after that. Once again, we are no beer of the night. So hopefully you guys are having something good. If you're having a decent IPA, let me know about it during the week. You can let me know. Nelly's here. Nelly, got anything to say? Nope. That was a shake of the head no. So Nelly the Bunny is hanging out once again. I'm sure making noise at some point later on. But she is hanging out. She's got a new little house or something here that I guess my wife got her that she's playing with a little bit. So maybe that that'll keep her a little bit sidetracked during the course of the podcast. So Jones gets traded to the Titans. As far as trades go, I mean, this kind of felt so anticlimactic. There was so much kind of about it. You know, it started, Peter King was the first to bring it up. And that was right around, I think, draft time, maybe a little bit before the draft is when he brought that up. That obviously created some buzz. And then you got into, well, who's in the Julio Jones sweepstakes? As things turned out, it really wasn't much of a sweepstakes. The Titans, as expected, as we talked about here, you know, the Titans were one of the teams that were going to be involved. But I think the main thing we touched on was what could the compensation packages be? And it seemed pretty far-fetched that they would be able to get a first-round pick for him. You know, he's 32 years old. He's coming off kind of an injury-filled kind of season. You don't know if he's going to want a new contract after this year or not. So usually you're not going to end up getting a first round pick for a player like that, at least not in the offseason. There's a possibility where if they let that drag on until the mid part of the year at the trade deadline, perhaps at that point in time, you kind of catch a team that's desperate, that thinks they have a Super Bowl window and they want to add a wide receiver. That's kind of what led to Mohamed Sanu getting a second round pick. That's what leads to an Emmanuel Sanders getting a third round pick. But that's waiting. That's essentially paying 6 weeks of salary for a player and having him sit around on the team, maybe be happy, maybe not be happy. In Sanu's case, Sanu's so down on the depth charts. You know, he's a third wide receiver, I think, at that point on that team, that probably wasn't as big of a deal. I think Sanders was a little bit more, he was very professional, but I would imagine he was a little bit more miffed at his situation. And the Falcons really couldn't function carrying Jones at this kind of salary into the regular season. So that was never going to be an option. But with the trade compensation coming down and not being a very exciting trade, the Titans being the team that he went to, which is a good fit. You know, he was on, they were on the list of the teams that we looked at. They made sense when you kind of broke down where their salary cap is going to be next year. Not so much this year, but where it was going to be next year. When you looked at the lack of depth that they had at wide receiver, you know, it made sense, I think, for them to make the trade. It's probably not as exciting as if he would have landed in a place like Seattle, or if he would have landed in, not that Green Bay was ever in it, but with a quarterback like that, there probably would have been more excitement. So I think maybe the Tannehill thing kind of took a little bit of a bite out of it, you know, but it was okay. As far as, sorry, we just had a little interruption from the little guy. So I think, though, what I was talking about there was, you know, from the Titans' perspective, I think the question that people maybe ask a little bit is, if they were going to do a move like this, why didn't they look to just kind of re-up Corey Davis and kind of keep things as is? You knew that was a nice compliment with Brown. You knew that what he had to offer, it was a good part of your offense last year. Plus, you also lost Smith in free agency, and you know, the salaries are pretty similar of the two players. But I think the differences here very clearly, even though Jones is 32 years old, Jones is a proven commodity. Davis might end up very well being kind of a one-year wonder. Davis's run to start was pretty rough. There's a reason why they didn't pick up the option on him. He came alive last year, played much better, but you don't know if that's going to be sustainable. The Jones situation, if he's healthy, that's probably sustainable. Secondly, Davis is definitely going to cost you guaranteed salary over 2 years. If Jones does flop, you can walk away from Jones after this year. You would not have been able to do that with Davis. Davis would have had his full salary guaranteed, whereas Jones, I think, has like a $2 million guarantee next year. So it's very different that way. Now, you are trading, obviously, youth away for a veteran, but the Titans, I think, are pretty much in a win-now window. I would actually probably argue that they might actually be out of it, but if you look at the way that they're built, where you've got kind of a, I won't call him a mid-tier quarterback, I guess, slightly above average, maybe. I think it's kind of similar to Cousins, probably a little bit like that. I think what the Titans do is they do a really good job of kind of playing to his strengths. They design things around what he does well, rather than making him try to do things maybe that he's not as good at. So I think they do a good job in that regard. But it's not as if you have a Matt Ryan in his prime. I don't view Tannehill as that level of player. But you look at the other guys that are there too. I mean, you're very running back centric with Derrick Henry as your kind of your designated closer. As soon as you're able to jump out on some of these big plays, they go to Henry, I think, pretty quick to try to close out some of these games, and to just wear teams down. That's not going to last forever. That's probably not going to last for a long time at all. So I think when you look at this stuff and you look at where the Titans are and you look at some of the moves that they've made on defense the last 2 years, just trying to get things right, I think that it's very much a win now mode. And I think this is a much, much, much more of a win now move than re-signing Davis would have been. So I think if you're going to go all in on it, this is not a bad way to do it. You're still holding your first round pick the next year. I think it's a decent enough move for them. But the thing is that what came up from this then was this clear, the salary cap is fake kind of talk. It's that move. It was the Saints. This week, the Saints restructured Marshawn Lattimore's deal where they basically added a bunch of void years. It's the same thing they did with Rankins last year. They added a bunch of void years to his existing contract to prorate money out. This way they could sign the rookies because they didn't have enough cap space to sign the rookies. The Bears were in discussions about Morgan Moses to bring him in as a right tackle now that they have their draft pick signed and that they have, I think, a little bit of a better idea as to where their salary cap is going to be headed. And so, of course, a lot of people come out and say, well, the cap isn't real. See, we told you, why do we ever get concerned with the salary cap? No team is ever over the cap. Well, you can't be over the cap. That's number one. All right. There's no such thing as a team being allowed to be over the salary cap. The Saints started out probably $100 million over in the offseason. They're not allowed by rule to be a dollar over once the actual league year begins. So, of course, nobody can be over the cap. It's within the rules. You have to do things in order to get yourself under the cap, whatever those things will be. People get confused all the time with cash spending and cap budgets and everything else in between with them. Teams have to operate within two frameworks. All right. So I think maybe I'll just start with that. The two frameworks that exist are your cash budget. So your owner is going to set an amount of money that they're willing to spend in a given year. Now, we track it. It's not 100% accurate because we don't track, nor do we have access to it, really, to be able to do it, the actual payment schedules on the bonuses. The bonuses themselves are not paid in a calendar year. Very often, they'll actually span two seasons a lot of times where we're talking about signing bonuses and stuff. But we just consider them as cash paid in a given season. And so you can track teams, and we do this for clients. What you do is you will track the cash spending year over year for teams, and you'll compare that to where the salary cap is. And usually we can kind of create a cash to cap ratio for the teams, and you can get you know, just using some basic stuff, looking at your deviations on the spending, you can kind of get an idea of where they're going to be. Now, every now and then, a team will just completely obliterate any kind of model that you expect. The Houston Texans last year were a perfect example of a team that obliterated all their spending norms when they just went haywire with a lot of their contract extensions, which they were going to have to do, and they probably were planning on for two seasons before that, which is one of the reasons why they had spent such little money going into that. But you have an idea, so you know what that's going to be. And if you obliterate your typical year, more often than not, the next year you see a big drop down in spending. That might be a team then that becomes pinched in free agency that decides they're not going to go out and participate in free agency at all, that they need to be more fiscally responsible because they spent so much money on the roster the year before that they have to hold back for a season. So that's one part of the budget. The other part of the budget is how do you account for all that within the NFL's accounting system, which is a salary cap? So there are two very different considerations that are in there. Most teams in the NFL, just if you really want to get into the nitty-gritty of it, the majority of teams in the NFL spend over the salary cap every year. So the cash is really never a concern. That was really something that I didn't understand where people were coming from, that the salary of Julio Jones at $15 million was somehow a block to getting a lot of teams involved in the trade. They wanted the Falcons to cover a portion of the salary. The only reason teams were looking for the Falcons to cover a portion of the salary is the Falcons were praying to get a first-round draft pick. And teams were not going to give that. Now, where I talked about, for example, that Jones could go for a first-round pick, if it was maybe during the middle of the season, they're essentially telling you, well, you're going to pay then 6-7 weeks salary. If you're going to get a first-round pick before we play a down this year, well, then you're going to have to pick up a lot of the salary because we're assuming all that risk by sending over a first-round pick. It has nothing to do with the money. He is incredibly affordable at 15.5, I think, this year, and like 11 and change next year, and then the same the year after that. I think those are his salaries. I didn't pull it up here. But I know he's very affordable. So the cash is not really a consideration. And for many of the teams, it's never a consideration. You know, there's a couple of teams that are almost always way over with the cash budgets that they're allotted from their owners. But at some point, the salary cap can become a block on that. You know, I'll give you one example of that. One example is the Carolina Panthers. The Carolina Panthers, for years and years and years, spent and spent and spent and spent. This was Herney, this was Gettleman, and it was Herney again. A lot of this, I think, traced back to Herney, whether it was crazy contracts for Jonathan Stewart, whether it was overshooting on Matt Khalil, whether it was D'Angelo Williams, whether it was Cam Newton. The Cam Newton contract was fine. There's no issues with that. But just all the various players that they've had through the years there, they would spend a lot. They also would push a lot of money into the future on their salary cap. And eventually it got to the point where even though they clearly have budgets that they can use, because if you look at their trends historically, they spend, they switched owners, they spent. They couldn't do it anymore because there wasn't, you couldn't manipulate the numbers anymore. It became very difficult to manipulate the numbers without completely making the organization crash and burn. So they pulled back, they pulled away, and they started to do what you're seeing now, which is a paring down of the roster, right? They cut away like their whole defense and stuff like that. But again, that's a cap consideration. The cash consideration, not really there. The requirement in the CBA is like a 90% spending. I think that was where the number jumped to. The average spend in the NFL is 101%. It's 101% of the salary cap. That's the average spend in the NFL. There's only a handful of teams that really are below like a 95 or 96% on an average kind of spending number. So teams spend. Cash is almost never a consideration for these deals. I shouldn't say it's never a consideration, but for a player like this, for a trade like this, the cash is not what's blocking a trade. That salary is not what's blocking a trade. Teams will be able to make money. They'll be able to go to the owner and say, hey, listen, I need an extra 15. I can get this guy here and he can help us win a championship. You know, if he gets us extra game in the playoffs, extra home game in the playoffs, gets us a Super Bowl easily we're going to make this stuff up. That's one aspect of it. But where you get into the cap is fake, it's where people look at this and they'll see the Titans with sitting there with $3 million. And what the Titans did is they took Ryan Tannehill's contract and they manipulated the numbers there to bring Ryan Tannehill's numbers way down. This way that you could fit Jones on the cap. This kind of gets to the Carolina example that I just brought up. In the short term, the salary cap is, yes, 100% absolutely fake. You can make the numbers do anything that you want in 1 year. That's why it's funny when you hear people getting called geniuses for basically going in there and restructuring contracts. You call someone a genius for using void years in a contract as if this was like some new magical thing that somebody discovered. These things have been in place since the early 2000s at the least. Now, they might have been earlier than that. It goes back to old rookie contracts. The restructuring has been there for ages and ages and ages. So for the short term, there is absolutely no impact. The problem comes in the long term. When you go to the long term for a lot of these teams, you run into those situations like Carolina, where you're kind of faced with a very pressing decision. It's like, do we continue to double down on this roster, or do we just kind of blow things up? Miami is a perfect example of that. Miami, a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, I think it was, they blew up their entire roster. They just basically quit on a season. They said, okay, it's screwed up. The cap is screwed up. The way we approach this the last couple of years was screwed up. What's our options? Our options are to tear it down, or options are to continue on this path, which really hasn't been that successful. So they decided to completely tear it down. So they sacrificed a year, really, because of their salary cap. That was a big reason why that year got sacrificed. 15 years ago, that would have been a very different outcome. And for some organizations right now, it would have been a very different outcome. They would have gone in there and they would have restructured the contracts of a bunch of those veterans so they could have continued to add parts in free agency, and they would have continued to chase these kind of 8 and 8, 9 and 7 years. The long term is really what you have to look at. So this week I did something where we started to look at the impact of restructured contracts on future success. And I think my biggest takeaway on it, and you can go read it, it's on the front page of OTC. So if you go to overthecap.com, you can check it out there. I think my main takeaway on that is the same takeaway that I had in Dead Money, about Dead Money when I did studies into that. The idea of dead money in and of itself is not bad. The idea in and of itself of a contract restructure is not bad up to a certain point. You want to be able to use as many tricks as possible to be able to add talent to your football team. That's what you want to be able to do. But there's a point where it becomes mismanaged. There's a point, where it kind of screws your team over. When it comes to dead money, that number is somewhere around 15% of the cap, maybe. You know, something like that, I think, is the number where that's at. I can't, or is it 15 million? I actually can't remember now. Now I'm getting my articles all a little bit mixed up here. But basically, there is a point where it's okay, and there is a point where it is, you know, really bad. And the reason why there's an okay range is, like I said, you're opening up room to be able to add maybe one or two more players who are going to help you. The problem is, if you have to restructure 10 contracts to add one or two more players, or if you've decided to restructure a bunch of contracts so you can add like five or six players, you're really creating this massive problem. So what I did was I broke teams down into restructure levels. So there's teams that do no restructures. There's teams that do up to about $7 million. I think it was 6.5 was the cutoff I used. Then I think it was teams that restructure between 6.5 and 14, maybe 14 or 15. 15, I think, was the number. And then there's the teams that go over that. 15 million up to, I think the highest was, I think it might have been 96. That would have been the Eagles, one of these. I think maybe the Eagles last year was like a $96 million in restructured contracts. When you looked at those, two things kind of stood out in the short window. And the short window is where you get the least amount of noise as to what's really going on here, you know, with it. The teams that didn't do much in the way of restructuring, didn't really improve so much that year. And in part, that's probably because they didn't maximize their avenues to add in talent. But then you looked at the teams that went overboard. Those teams typically got worse. They had bad results. You didn't see teams improve. Now, those teams are probably starting out from, and they are. I mean, I have the numbers up there. They're starting out from a little bit of a better standpoint than the bad, than the teams that don't restructure. A lot of the teams that don't restructure were teams that were pretty much sub 500, whereas the teams that do restructure a lot are over 500. But you don't see improvement. You don't see jumps to a 10-win level. And in the league, and now I know we're going to have to change those numbers around, but your goal in the league is probably going to be a 10-win season. So any kind of tricks that you are doing with your salary cap and your system has to do with, you know, getting to 10 wins. If you did that to remain 8-8, it's a failure, right? That's a failure. 8-8 is the same as going 5-11. That's considered a failure to me, especially if you're going to push that money around. When you look then at the long term, and it's hard to just make the statement, well, the restructure screws you over, because there's so many different variables at play. When you do look at a lot of the teams that go into these high level of restructures, when they do it 2 years in a row, yeah, there might be some residual impact down the line. But for the majority of the teams, you can actually get away with 1 year of just kind of going crazy with it, to where I can't say it's good for the team, right? Because it didn't help you really in the short term. And we can't say that it's not hurting you in the long term. All we can say is that it's not catastrophically hurting you in the long term. You know, who knows how many other players you would have been able to add. You know, you might just be kind of treading water at 8-8. 7-9, 8-8, but whatever those numbers are, while you have a good quarterback. You know, the Drew Brees phenomenon in New Orleans. You know, everybody loves to point to New Orleans as if Mickey Loomis does magic, that like he's a magician. People forget you were talking about someone who was the third best quarterback in the league that people talk about as almost as elite as possible. All right. Now, he doesn't go on the same plane as Manning and Brady, but you know, he's talked about a lot as a player like that. And you're in a league where the quarterback really drives a lot of the wins and losses. It's hard if you have a truly elite quarterback. It's hard to not win in the NFL. It really is. It's hard to not do. They went 7-9 3 years in a row. Why did they go 7-9? People say, well, they didn't draft good. They led the league in dead money by a lot year after year after year. They weren't able to add the same as other teams. You want to be able to add to your team every single season. You don't want to have to go in and just go crazy and add everyone. You want to have the flexibility to be able to continue to add players in, while you subtract players out. When you build up these bad salary cap situations, what happens is that you can't bring players in, or you can only bring a limited amount of players in. It's very hard to get players out. So you kind of get this logjam of players who have already hit their peak and now are declining. And it doesn't mean they're bad players. It's just that they're not going to recapture what they used to be. Look at Atlanta. Atlanta, it's been that same core group for some time, except they get older. They're not as effective anymore. It doesn't matter which one of the players that you're looking at, they're not as effective. And what could they do within their salary cap framework? You know, bringing guys like Todd Gurley. That's just throwing money away. Now, that's like the Eagles this year. People, well, the Eagles signed Ryan Kerrigan. The Eagles signed Anthony Harris. The Eagles signed Eric Wilson. That's throwing money away for where that team is right now. You know, if you want to do a move, if you want to do two moves, I guess knock yourself out. If you look at the big picture, if you look at where they are as a team, that's probably throwing money away. But, you know, this is that that's I'll say that some of those players are they're nice contracts based on what the expectations are of those players. League-wide, obviously, there were dings against every one of these players. I'm saying, yeah, that's a great deal to get, Harris for $4 million. I think that's the number they got him at, you know, to get him for four. Nobody else in the league wanted him for four. So I was just way off. I thought he was going to go for like $10, $11 million. I was just way off on what I thought the market would be. That market did not exist for him. So he goes to Philadelphia, and he might be fine. And you can say, well, that's a great bargain. Look at Philadelphia. I mean, they're not in a great position. It's not a great destination right now. And I don't really know why they're doing that. I guess you're just adding to add. You know, most of the other stuff they've done, I think has made a lot of sense. That's really the thing with the restructure stuff, where you just keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it. But what the Titans did here, it's perfectly fine to do it one time, and that's about it. You know, you also leverage yourself, though, with some of these players, you know, where you have a player like Tannehill. Now, it hasn't gotten extreme with him. But if you go back to like Dallas with Tony Romo, they were so leveraged out. They had no options but to kind of pay him top dollar, even though he was physically breaking down, even though he's playing well. Everybody knew that there was a lot of risk that was involved there. And there was so much money tied up in that contract that there was nothing they could do with it. They were basically stuck that you had to extend him no matter what. You know, there wasn't much they could do. You know, the Ravens with Joe Flacco, they didn't have a lot of options. They really didn't. So long term, you can definitely get hurt by it. It depends on how you react to it. You know, I think one of the things that's different in the NFL now than in the past, the front offices are more agile with what they do. And I think there's more of an acceptance of losing in the unknown. There was a time, and I'm not big on the whole losing thing, the tanking stuff that you hear about. You know, I'm not a fan of that. I've said that plenty of times. In my opinion, the draft is too much of a crapshoot. It's not basketball. The odds would be against, for as good as Trevor Lawrence may end up being, the odds would probably be against him solely being capable of turning an entire franchise around. That's just the way it is. You know, yeah, you want to get your best opportunities to get better. But I think there's almost always talent available at all levels of the draft. But, you know, I can at least understand a little bit for the quarterback selection to some extent. But, you know, teams are more willing to take on those roles. They're more willing to gut a roster and go through that Miami Dolphins season to see if they can become respectable. You know, I think the initial modeling of that really was the Raiders, who did it because they had no choice. Their cap had gotten so out of control, they actually couldn't function anymore. So they were willing to do that, and they were able to, within, I'd say, 2 years, to at least be like a normal franchise again. You know, we would pick on the Raiders for certain things, but you know, they at least they kind of got back to normal. This is all very different than in the past. Now, I think teams' salary cap situations have been saved a lot by the change in the rookie wage scale. That took out a lot of costs that were basically sunk on the salary cap and replaced them with very tiny costs that became sunk on the salary cap. So teams got a big benefit from that. They got a big benefit from the fact that you can kind of manipulate stuff with carryover if you want to do a year where you do nothing. To where you can carry that over to another year, to where you do have extra space to manipulate contracts. But I think the main thing is that teams are willing to, even if it's, especially, I guess, after you switch general managers, I think the GMs a lot of times go into these jobs telling the ownership, well, listen, we got to fix this mess. Now, I'm sure when Atlanta was taken over, it's like, look, we got a mess here. And we've got to fix this, and it's going to take 2 years to fix this mess. So I think you do get a lot of that, and the teams that are smart about it and approach it the right way, I think they're able to get out of these things. You look at the Eagles, for example, and I always say I think the Eagles are a really smart front office. Now, I didn't understand some of those signings they made. If you look at the things that they did this offseason, they looked at where they were as a team, and it probably would have been different if they were 9-7 last year. They moved Carson Wentz because there was a lot of risk that was left with him, and there was a lot of financial risk that was left with him. So even though it completely changed the dynamic of their salary cap by cutting him because they were going to take on so much dead money this year, for the long term, and based on where they are as a team right now, which is 6-7 win kind of team, it made more sense for them to bring in younger, cheaper quarterback that they can evaluate while you have a veteran on there if the young quarterback is a complete flop, and save the salary that they were going to pay Carson Wentz this year and save the money that they were going to be obligated to pay Carson Wentz next year because of the way the guarantees worked out if they would have kept him on the roster continuing to chase a 7-win season. All right, the wheels were set in motion for this last December when they tanked that last game to get a draft pick, to get a higher draft pick. You saw the moves they made this offseason. What are they doing? They're building up draft capital in the future because they're at a point where they can't continue to do these things with their contracts to go into free agency or to be able to continue if they want to extend some of their younger players. They need to get things right. And the way to get things right is to basically say, we're going to move away from expensive talent. And now we're going to have to move to cheaper talent for a little bit of time. And that's a very big departure from the Eagles because the Eagles traditionally were the highest spending roster every year or highest spending organization. If they weren't the highest, they were number two or number three, you know, way, way, way over whatever the salary cap was. So there are teams that are willing to do that. The Eagles are a team that I think was willing to do that. I don't think they felt as if they were forced to do it. And so teams like that are probably able to deal with some of these restructured duds a little bit better than others. I think the other thing that happens is when you do go and look at those, the numbers in that article, you look at the teams that were able to finish 10 wins back to back. It sucks. So if you were a good team and you pushed a bunch of money in the future because you said that's the only way that we can be as good or better, it doesn't happen. You don't get better. You get worse. The majority of the teams get worse. So if you had a 9-10 win season the year before, and maybe GM's seat's a little bit warm, not flaming hot, just a little bit warm because you expect a little bit more. So they're going to blow their cap up and they're going to do some things. And they end up finishing the year with 5 or 6 wins and they get fired. Well, that sets the wheels in motion for the next person to come in. And instead of doubling down yet again, they come in and they say, blow it up. We got to blow it up. We got to get rid of it. Your last guy really screwed this up. We're going to take this job, but we're going to take this job and we're going to blow it up. Those things, I think, also factor into teams being able to get around some of these wild restructure things they do. But you can't say it's fake. And you can't say that it doesn't impact you. All you have to do is just look at a couple of teams. Just look at a couple of teams from these last couple of seasons and just look at how they're functioning. I mean, let me just pull up the cap numbers right now. I'm not going to pull up exact stuff, but you know, you look at the Buccaneers, they made a bunch of different things. The Giants. So the Giants did this a couple years ago when they went on that wild spending spree for all those guys in free agency and attempt to win, and it got them to a wild card game, and then they crashed and burned. The Giants did a lot of things this year with contracts that they signed that might be very worrisome in the future. And next year, they're not going to be able to spend. I think they're pretty much on the record telling you that. Look at the Packers. The Packers are having to restructure the contracts of restricted free agents with void years. They didn't add one player in free agency. Now, I know the Packers don't add much usually. They added nobody. They added like no one. Yeah, the Eagles, I mean, that's pretty self-explanatory. The Falcons, obviously, they're driven a lot by what goes on with the cap right now. The Bears, yeah, the Bears have done what they can to skirt the cap for a couple of years. They're a team that keeps kicking, and they really don't get over the hump. You know, the Steelers were a mess this year. Lost players left and right, had to do the deal with Roethlisberger. They didn't have any other options. It's a contract disaster. What's sitting there? The Saints have like over $30 million in dead money next year for contracts that are going to void. The Eagles and the Falcons are already at $15 million next year on the books. Saints might get out of some of those if they extend some of those players. Those are huge numbers to be at when you're not even in July. You're not even in August. You're not the regular season. So it's not a fake thing. You have to be smart with it. Because if it was fake, all these general managers wouldn't get fired. You know, the Falcons wouldn't have been boxed into a corner to where they had to do stupid stuff that made them get even worse and they got fired. Right? The Panthers wouldn't have had to overhaul their organization, you know, if they did things differently. You look at a lot of these teams, know, and you look at stuff that's gone on there. You know, why is Ryan Pace on the hot seat in Chicago? Well, he's not winning. He didn't get a quarterback. Part of the reason he's on the hot seat is because they don't have a great situation moving forward. If you are looking at ways to add talent to the team, if you take an objective look at the future of some of these teams, like the Packers, for example, you go, where are they going to go to add talent? Now, the Packers maybe they're going to get rid of Aaron Rodgers. Most teams probably wouldn't do that. You know, they wouldn't have drafted a quarterback to be in a position for that. Now, you look at those things and you really have to decide what is and what isn't good. It's one of the reasons why when like ESPN does these futures rankings, I don't really understand them at all, because a lot of futures rankings that they put in place clearly have almost no consideration of future cap for teams. They have no consideration for the fact that teams have a ton of free agents sometimes coming up in the next year, and that they just look at it and it's just taking a look at, oh, well, they've got some young players. They've got a good quarterback. Yeah, they're number one for the future. There's a lot of different things you have to look at in terms of quote unquote keeping the band together and how they're going to be able to do that. So a lot of different things there. But yeah, I absolutely cannot look at the stuff and say the cap is fake. It has nothing to do with, you know, running a salary cap site. You know, it's just, it is what it is. There are teams every year that are basically out of free agency before free agency even begins because of the salary cap. Maybe it's not overt. Maybe they're not telling you that. But the reason they're out is because of the cap. You know, the reason the Giants will probably be out of free agency next year is because of the salary cap. Now, they're not going to track over the cap. At least I don't think they are, right? Where are the Giants next year? You know, Giants are going to be at around 1.8. You know, and there will be some standard moves that they make that'll jump that up. So they'll never be over the cap to where someone's going to say, well, they've got a problem. But if you take an objective look and you look at it, they're probably going to be blocked from adding players because of their salary cap, unless they want to take that 1 year short-term risk and then decide that 2023 and 2024 are going to be years that are bad. Saints, Rams, Cowboys, Packers especially. You know, those are teams people will talk about because they're going to begin over the cap. You look at the Bills, you know, what the Bills will do is the Bills will extend Josh Allen, and that will hide the fact they don't have cap problems. I'm not trying to say the Bills have cap problems, but it will hide the fact that they probably weren't going to go and sign a whole bunch of dudes in free agency anyway, in part because they're looking out for their long term. Bills are a good organization. They're smart front office, smart team. So I'm pretty sure that's the way that they will handle it. But once Josh Allen is done, it's going to look like there's no cap issues there at all. But again, when you look at the big picture and you look at the rookies on that team who are coming up for extensions and you look at the players falling off the roster and ones you have to replace and positions you have to replace, it's not a spot where you're going to say, okay, we can go out there and just do what we want in free agency. Like I said, it's hidden. Now, you look at the 49ers with some of the players that they've, you know, approached to bring in. It's not what they did a couple of years ago where they signed a bunch of guys, right? Now, you don't look at them and go, well, San Francisco 49ers, they have cap problems. You know, they have $18 million in cap space right now, give or take again a little bit. You know, in large part, that is because of decisions that they made in the past. And they've said, well, we can't continue to double and triple down, right? They were a bad team last year. So sometimes, even when it's not overt that the salary cap is an issue, the salary cap is a consideration for what teams are doing. It's a consideration for who they can approach, who they can attract. Do you think San Francisco, if they were in a better position, do you think they would have traded to the Colts last year? I don't think they would have. But when you looked at where they were going to be with the salary cap, it probably made more sense for them to move Buckner and to bring back a first round pick, which is going to be cheaper, much cheaper. So that was... No, I think that's the reason why you do stuff like that. It's not just about the budget. You know, most of these teams can afford it. There's very few times where you will hear about a player who is not being brought back because he is legitimately too expensive. There might be a couple times where they say, well, he's not worth the money he's asking for. Okay. That's a little bit different than, no, he's too expensive. Very few. You know, recently, who were some players who were deemed too expensive? Gosh, there's not many. I can think Khalil Mack, probably. You know, John Gruden decided before anything that it was way too much money to spend on a pass rusher. Not anyone. He said, no, he's too expensive. That was the whole push for trading him, I think, was that he was too expensive. Beyond that, I can't think of too many people that it was like, no, just too expensive. But the cap stuff comes into play with a lot of it because you lose your flexibility, you lose your agility, and you get pigeonholed into a roster that gets older. And unless you hit that home run in the draft, you know, you kind of put yourself in quicksand when you do a lot of these moves and just get pulled down and pulled down and pulled down. So I think that was just something I wanted to talk about here. I've rambled on long enough. The only other thing that I wanted to bring up a little bit was this theory now that going back to Julio Jones, that he got traded because he demanded out. I mean, that is something that just came up afterwards once he got floated that he was being traded. He came out and was like, well, I wanted to get traded. Look, if Jones was demanding a trade in March, you really think we wouldn't have heard about it until he mentioned it in May? Let's be real. Teams don't almost never give in to this stuff. You know, I've said it before that there are times where the situations can maybe get too crazy. And the social media stuff is something that more teams are going to have to keep up with and be aware of the potential, the possibilities that are there. But in general, you know, it's not an issue, all right? Yeah, if you're Antonio Brown and you're doing this crazy stuff, yeah, you're probably going to punch your ticket out. But who else is asking for trades getting moved? Deshaun Watson didn't get moved. Russell Wilson's now, you know, well, no, it was never really asked. I was just given suggestions if they wanted to move me where I would go. Rodgers hasn't been moved yet. They're complaining about him, saying he's dividing the fan base. If they move him, if they move Aaron Rodgers, they're moving Aaron Rodgers because they like what they see out of Jordan Love at the beginning of training camp. That's the only reason they move Aaron Rodgers, is if they determine from watching him in training camp that they can turn the reins over to him and they can get a max return on Aaron Rodgers, then they'll do it. If Jordan Love looks terrible, they'll very quickly make up with Aaron Rodgers. You know, it really doesn't happen. Happens in other sports. Does not happen in this one. Maybe it will one day. I don't see it at all. You know, Carson Wentz demanded out of Philadelphia. Come on. You think Philadelphia was like, oh man, Carson Wentz doesn't want to be here. We got to get rid of him. It might just be he sucked. Because he sucked really bad last year. And he pouted. Maybe I shouldn't say pouted, but he was unhappy. He was terrible. He had a lot of money that was going to be guaranteed to him. And Philadelphia was a bad football team. So what do you think drove that? The fact that he nicely asked for a trade? Or the fact that he was terrible and the team was bad and he was going to cost them a hell of a lot of money and he might get even worse? I think I know the answer to that one. If you want to believe something else, you can believe something else. That this is not a league where, when you're asking for trades, they're just trading you like, oh, yeah, we paid you all that money as a signing bonus. Don't worry about it. All good. Let's shake hands. We'll send you out of here now that you don't really want to be here anymore, you know, a year or two later. They get rid of you when they're done with you. Now, if there's a debate as to whether or not they want to keep you through training camp and you go to them right now and you say, you know, I'd like to be traded, they'll say, okay. But in the back of their mind, they were already thinking about asking you for a pay cut, or they were going to ask, they were going to cut you if they had somebody else better that kind of showed on tape in the preseason. So I do not buy the notion at all that NFL players are able to make their way out from their contracts because they're unhappy. I just don't. All right. Now let's go on to questions here. I think there was only one via email and I got that today. So sorry if I missed anybody else's. So let me just start with that, and then I'll go to Twitter and see what we've got there. I know I put it out a couple times, but I don't think I saw anything. Okay, so John had a question here. He saw the breakdown of Ryan Tannehill's contract restructure. Notices P5 salary for this year is 1.5 and 29 next year. If that's the case, can you please explain why the 50% rule does not apply? The 50% rule is a 50% down rule. So you can go up. You can go up, 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 up. They don't want you to be able to do a trick to where if you had a ton of cap room that you put all your salary cap space in one player so he would have like no cap charges in the future. It was kind of the opposite of like the Deion Sanders thing, but that was the reason behind it. That's why I remember when Jimmy Garoppolo did that big contract where he had that massive cap hit in year one. There wasn't a way for him to go from like $37 million cap hit to two. He had to go in between. So that's why if you look the next year, it's not a high number, but they had to be at least 50% on that. Otherwise, they start counting the stuff as a signing bonus. Now, I think the actual reason behind that rule probably stems from the union side of things, going back to the old CBA where you had spending based on salary cap. What would happen there is you had to spend within, was it 10 million or 10% of the cap? Gosh, that's so long ago. I don't even remember. But whatever it was, whatever that number was, what you did not want was a team to basically manipulate the cap by doing that and not actually spending on their roster. By preventing teams from doing that, it opened the door to make it so it was going to be more open to other players, to also be able to take up some of those cap charges. And then, there's also the competitive balance thing that you did not want a team to kind of be able to put all the money for 1 year on a quarterback in the salary cap and then have nothing to worry about the following years. That's what that is. But that's why it's not an issue. It's the other way around, which is where it would become the issue. All right, let's pull up our questions here on Twitter. Don't know how many. Haven't really looked. Doesn't look. Oh, not too many. Okay, good. So we'll get done quick. Well, hopefully quick. All right. Proud Black Matt says, hey, Jason, if your perceptions on the amount of dead money an organization would be willing to take on change this year with the Wentz and Julio trades, I had assumed their contracts made them untradeable. No, I don't think it really changes it that much. You know, the Jones one, not at all. They waited until June 1st because it was the only way they could process it. The Eagles, you know, the Eagles one with Wentz is a little bit different. I do think the teams are willing to take on more, but it gets back to that scenario where you say, are the teams willing to kind of hit a reset button? And I think with Wentz, it was the numbers that were there, if he was still on the Eagles roster, were going to be so high that this made more sense for them than keeping him. You know, I was not totally on that they can't trade Wentz. I didn't know if people would really want him. It was Andrew Brandt was completely on the no way in hell that it happens because of the cap number. You know, depending on what teams are willing to do, I think there is a willingness that teams are able to do with some of these players. What it doesn't do is, I think when you look again at kind of flexibility with moving players, you can't cut these players. You know, the cut route still doesn't exist for any of these guys because of that. Because you're going to have to write them a check to go away. That doesn't exist. You're still blocked on that. There are benefits that you can get in the trade depending on what the numbers are. So it's the benefits of the draft picks that you get in return and how much money you're actually saving over the long term. So whereas Wentz costs the money this year on the salary cap, it actually saves the money on the salary cap over the next 2 years. Let's just pull up those numbers. And this is one of the reasons why I said, well, you know, maybe he could get traded. You know, the Rodgers one was more that I was more anti-trade on. Again, based on construct of his deal and based on, you know, where they were as a franchise, I thought it was much, much, much less likely that he would get moved. But I guess still maybe a possibility. But let me just bring up Wentz. So in Wentz's case, if the Eagles hold on to Wentz, here's the way that you have to look at this. So the Eagles ended up taking on 33.8 dead. All right. So option one is 33.8 dead. If they kept him on the team this year, his charge was 34.7. So it was going to be more by keeping him on the team. So yeah, the number is huge. At the least, those two numbers are within the same ballpark. I think typically you want to have situations that always exist to where the team is going to save at least $5 to $7 million with these releases of these big number players. As long as you're saving something or only losing a little bit, I think it's okay. Now, what else goes into the equation? So here we have two scenarios that are basically the same. The only difference is that the 34-7, the Eagles could have manipulated for short-term gain, but they were still going to have to pay it on the cap at some point in time. So it's a sunk cost if they don't trade them. It's just that they can manipulate when they take those charges. Now, if they keep him, the next year, he's got $31 million in cap charges. His salary would have been guaranteed. You would have had a scenario where if he sucked again next year, you know, if he was really bad, you're stuck with him. So now you're stuck with him at 31.3, you know, that you have to deal with. Let me see if anything else kicked in this year. Okay, so it's $15 million of his base in 2022 became guaranteed. So let's just say 15 on that. So you would have had $15 million that you would have had as a sunk cost if you couldn't trade him, plus the other prorated money that was involved. So you would have had 15 plus, let's see where he was. You would have had 2 years at 9.3 plus another year at 6. So you would have had another $40 million that was in sunk costs. So you'd be looking at $74 million. So your real numbers that you're looking at here are $74 million on versus $33.8 million off. So you've saved $40 million probably in cap space by not having him on your roster this year and just, you know, taking all that money. Because you save the $25.4 in salary for this year. And then you save the extra 15 that was going to get guaranteed. Now, even if you would say, okay, well, we still think we can trade him next year, so we're not going to eat that 15. Even if you pull that out, you know, let's just pull that out. You know, you're still looking at $60 million versus $33.8. So it's about $25 million saved. So that's really the right way to look at it, where you're looking at a player that you're going to cut. You know, again, it's the short-term versus the long-term view. You have to take a long-term view. And if you can find a way to where you're not paying more money to the player to go away, or at least a significant amount of money to the player go away, in the long-term, over your obligation years, I'm not talking about 4 or 5 years down the line where nothing's guaranteed, none of that stuff matters. You're just looking at what are the costs that are going to be associated with keeping the player. Those are the decisions that you have to make. Yeah, that's why sometimes it makes more sense to trade a player a year early than a year late. You know, there's a lot of things involved. If you are thinking about cutting a player and you look at the cap numbers and you go, gosh, you know, here's our options. We can keep him for this year at 15 on the cap, or we can cut him and it's 13 on the cap. You know, well, for that extra $2 million, we should keep him. You know, now depending on what the salaries are, but let's say you're paying him $10 million for the year and he's already kind of got 1 foot out the door. You're already thinking that he should go. You're probably wasting whatever that salary is that you could pawn off on somebody else, that $10 million, you're wasting that. So even though your dead ledger looks better, even though people won't make as much of a stink about it, probably because you didn't trade him so early in the contract, you're still hurting yourself probably long-term by not doing that. So I think that's kind of the way I would look at a lot of those players. Yeah, it's just a way to look at it that's a little different. And it's way different than the way we present it on the site. We present everything on the site as kind of a short-term, right? Cap on, dead, off. You know, that's kind of how we have everything. But if you're running a team, you need to take a bigger picture view of what this trade means. You know, if the player's got 1 foot out the door, which means, let's say there's only a 20% chance he's going to be effective enough to where you want to keep him the next year, do the numbers over a 2-year period, what it's going to cost you to keep him versus what it's going to cost on your cap to keep him or to cut him or trade him in this case. And that's how you kind of can come up with the reasons behind why some of these teams take on these big numbers. You know, it's like when the Cowboys traded cut Dez Bryant. I was one of the few people, actually, I was probably the only person that was talking about that the December before. He wasn't playing up to the contract level. His play, I think, was declining. You know, I would watch enough Cowboys games to see that he didn't look like the same player. And when you looked at the Cowboys situation with the cap and you looked at what his numbers were going to be the following year on the cap with the team if they kept him, and then when you looked at what it was going to be if he was off the team, saving on that salary for that year made a lot of sense, even if it looked really bad to cut him so few years into that big contract that he signed. You know, it just made sense from a long-term health perspective with your cap, even though that dead money number looks ridiculous sometimes. So that's the way I would look at it, is I would look at the, you know, long-term, short-term ramifications of keeping the player. Now, if this was Carson Wentz's, if there was no guarantees for Carson Wentz next year and the dead money was really tiny, like whatever was remaining sunk in the contract, then I'd probably have a completely different opinion. I'd say, well, you know, then yeah, you're going to keep the player probably. You know, if there's not much that you're going to get charged next year to have him or to cut him. But yeah, this wasn't the case. Okay, Chris says, the Saints have put on a salary cap clinic this offseason. Is the league okay with the Saints' detailed use of the system, or will they look to button up the use of void years, especially in how they were used in the Lattimore extension? No, these things have existed for years. This is not new. The Eagles' trickery of the June 1 last December was way more new manipulative of the system than anything the Saints did. You know, the Saints did what they've always done. The Eagles have kind of done a lot of the same things they've done. The Falcons didn't really get into the void year stuff. I'll give them that. I don't know. The Saints did the same stuff we put out there in a post on OTC is, well, this is what they're going to do. This is what they'll probably do with Drew Brees. It's what they did with Drew Brees. This is what they will probably do with this player. This is what they will do with this one. There's nothing new about it. The only new things about it is because the salary cap dropped this year and more people paid attention to the salary cap and some of the numbers became ridiculous for the Saints and the Eagles in particular for where they were with the cap. More attention was paid to it from the bigger outlets that report on the NFL because the contract reporting in the NFL kind of isn't that good. Not in terms of breaking news, but in terms, I think, of analyzing the legitimacy of a lot of these positions. You know, it gets back to what I was talking about before with the ESPN rankings, future rankings of teams that clearly takes almost no consideration in for what really the future looks like for a lot of the teams. This is all stuff that has been around for ages. That's why it's comical to me when Florio knows better because he knows about these things, you know, goes out there and puts out a post back in like February. Oh, I know the solution to it. It's a thing called void years. Let me tell you about this trick. This trick's existed for a billion years, but people are bringing the attention to it, and some people didn't really know about it before. They're new reporters or reporters who maybe hadn't paid that kind of attention to it, and now it's become a story this year. So more people are bringing attention to it because it became a story. When teams did start to abuse the void years back in probably started 2012, 2013, where I think it started to become an abuse of things. I kind of thought that would be something that was addressed in the CBA, and it was not. So clearly it doesn't concern the teams at all. So they're not going to care about it. So I don't see the league reacting to it at all. There's nothing against the rules, and there's nothing really different about what they did, unless someone wanted to complain about the date of the Drew Brees thing. And there's been plenty of other teams that have done the same stuff. Super Bowl Bills 2022 says, as we expand the season to 17 games, do you think depth is becoming more valuable? And what do you think the value of having depth is? I don't know. I'm not sure. This is the first year where we're going to see it. My gut reaction is going to be no. And the only reason I say that is because two teams every year make the Super Bowl. They play a lot of football games. I don't think there's going to be as much of the managing of snaps that would be out there typically, because we can watch Patrick Mahomes play a bunch of games. We can watch Tom Brady play a bunch of games. Josh Allen last year play a bunch of games. And I'm not watching them in January and December and saying, man, the arms look shot. Or, wow, these teams are so beat up, they're not out there playing. You know, it doesn't look right. I don't think that's the case at all. I think the lack of play in the preseason, I think the lack of beatings that get taken on in training camp help in terms of the play at the end of the season. I think the play at the beginning of the season is actually kind of poor. Maybe that's where your depth actually helps a little bit more. But it's something that we have to wait and see as to what that is. But every year I watch teams go into the playoffs and I don't see physical breaking down to where an extra game, I think, is going to impact anything. It does put, you know, it's an extra game to have a risk of injury. So you may see a lot more meaningless football games in week 17 or game 17. I guess that'll be week 18. But I don't know. Since I don't see it with the teams in the playoffs and I don't see any residual, like, again, it's quarterback league, right? I don't see a residual Patrick Mahomes having to play all those games or Brady every year, basically adding, Brady's what, 43 years old or something like that? 42, 43, however old he is. He's been playing forever. And when you look at all the playoff games he's played, I mean, it's like extra seasons of work. He's fine. So I just haven't seen that where you look at these perennial teams that go into the playoffs. I just don't see where those extra games, that there is at any point where I'm watching a team in the NFC or the AFC championship game and just saying, wow, they're tired. They just look like it was one game too many. You know, I just don't see that. I mean, there might be some games where you do look at them and you say, okay, these guys went from the wild card. They've been bouncing around. You know, they played one wild card game in New York. And then the next week they have to go out to California to play a second game. And then now they're bouncing to a championship game in a completely different environment. And yeah, they're a little bit more out of it than the team that got a bye week. Yeah, maybe that's a little something, but I don't ever look at it and say, wow, they're just exhausted from playing an extra week of football. I just don't see that. So I don't know. We'll see how it works out though. You know, if it does happen that way, you will see some changes, I think, that go on with the contracts. Bob has a question here. If a team has a quarterback who is playing well but has a poorly built roster overall, should the team be considered rebuilding regardless of what they do with the quarterback? And we've got Nelly making some background noise here. You good, Nelly? No, we're going to keep drinking some water. All right. So we'll have a little Nelly noise here. That's a good question. Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, Houston is a perfect example of that right now, right? Houston has a terrific quarterback and they're awful. They're absolutely, absolutely awful. Oh, and what was the thing this week that they were going to take the guy that the Vikings took? What a terrible year for Houston. Just, it's almost comical. Yeah, and it's coming from a Jets fan. All right. You know, but that's a team that has a good quarterback and they're considered rebuilding. Now, I think that's pretty much the case. You know, there's very few, even though it is a quarterback driven league, you know, I consider the Drew Brees thing to be the kind of the pinnacle of what a bit of a declining roster can do, even with a good quarterback. And that's, you know, 7-8 win kind of team, where you kind of bounce around in that range. But yeah, I think you would consider those teams to be rebuilding. I think the problem is that a lot of the teams don't want to embrace rebuilding while that quarterback is there. And some of that is probably because the quarterbacks would be pretty unhappy with it, you know, if you go to do that. So I think they look more to kind of retool, you know, rebuild a little bit on the fly. And it's probably not as open as it should be. But yeah, I think you can have a rebuilding team with a good quarterback. But I think that the rebuild, it's a very different type of rebuild than you have when you have a team with no quarterback. It's just, it's different. It should be shorter term and there are more risks you probably should be taking. Lance says, no question. Just wanted to say he enjoys listening. So thank you very much, Lance. GH3, top three most likely holdout candidates, if any. Ooh, that's good. Well, I mean, Aaron Rodgers this year. You know, he's a definite. You know, the new rules that are in place make it a lot more difficult for veterans to hold out. So I don't think that that will be one. Let's take a quick look at who some of the players are coming up in free agency. Really, I guess we're mainly looking at the draft, right? We're looking at the, you know, you haven't had a lot of contract extensions yet. I haven't heard any rumblings of Jamal Adams. See, a player like that makes sense to me as a potential holdout, because this is someone who has really, really, really wanted a contract and has gotten nowhere. I don't expect TJ Watt to hold out. But I guess I would throw Jamal Adams in that mix. Aaron Rodgers, even though he's a veteran player. I'm just looking at younger players here. I'm just trying to think that, because they don't have the same kind of penalties when they don't do that. Who else would be, you know, Barkley can't after being injured. I don't think he can, at least. You know, otherwise he would be someone that I would say would probably hold out. Evan Ingram, same deal. He's coming off a terrible season. Maybe Nick Chubb. I think he's eligible, right, for an extension? Yeah, I don't see any of the quarterbacks holding out. Cortland Sutton's coming off of an injury, right? So I don't see that. Christian Kirk, no. DJ Chark, probably not. Warner, no. Brown, no. Mark Andrews, that won't be a problem. Quarterbacks, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, that's not going to be an issue. I'm not seeing anybody else. You know, and I haven't really kept up on the issues with certain players, but, you know, Jamal Adams would be the type of guy that I think would be upset if he doesn't get extended. Aaron Rodgers, because of whatever that situation is. You know, I think Chubb might make a sense just because of the position. And it's almost like with that position, sometimes you got to take that chance to try to push those salaries. You know, Chandler Jones, it sounds like, is unhappy. I don't anticipate him holding out, only because of some of the penalties that are involved. So now, if you're talking about the short-term holdout, you know, where in the no fine zone kind of thing, yeah, then a player like that might hold out for 5 days or something like that, just to make a statement, make a stance on it, and just be like, you know, I'm looking for a new deal. You know, if those are the players, let's see who are some of the other ones I would put into that category. Just looking quickly here. I don't know why Drew Brees is showing up as, we haven't retired. I don't know why he's still showing up as void. We must have put something wrong on him. You know, Allen Robinson, I don't think he'll hold out, but that would be, you know, that would make a little bit of sense. But that wouldn't make any sense. What am I saying? He signed his franchise tag, right? So no, he's not going to. I forgot that he did. Matthew with the Chiefs, maybe. Devontae Adams probably shouldn't take a snap with the Packers right away. You know, that's the type of player. Gilmore, it's not going to go anywhere with the Patriots, but I mean, Gilmore could do something like that. Just looking at anybody else that stands out. Yeah, I think those are the ones. I think those are the guys. I don't think Harrison Smith is going to do anything. Yeah, so I think that's kind of the list of players that I would look at just to see if there was a little thought that maybe they might not show up for a couple days. Let's see. Another one from Super Bowl Bills 22. From a cap perspective, is there a specific formula for success to base your team off of? You know, such as quarterbacks, 15 to 25% of cap, running back 5%, cornerback 10. I don't think so. I'd have to do more of a kind of a study on that. We've done some stuff on it, but I don't think that there has really been anything that is, you know, so overt that it gives you like, well, this is the magic formula. You know, because I think a lot of times, and this is probably why I haven't looked at it this way, when you get into roster construction, the contract values of the rookies completely throw things off once you start looking at them that way, because the rookies are worth so much more than what they're paid. It's hard to say. It's more, I think, of a question of, is there a path? And I'm not saying that I know this answer either, but is the theoretical path that I kind of like to talk about, which is you get your wide receiver, your defensive end, maybe one corner, and of course quarterback until you get a solid one. You know, you get those guys and a left tackle. You keep selecting those types of players through the draft. And then you spend your money in free agency on a couple more corners. That's where you go and buy your linebackers. You get your guards or your center via free agency, your right tackle. You know, but that would change the way that things looked in terms of the salary breakdowns, because it's just more of a concept of how you approach paying your roster, not what are your limits as to payment on it. You know, the other things you can do is you can look at positional spending, where you I guess that takes a little bit more into account, takes out some of the rookiness from it. It doesn't with quarterback. But you know, you can group your secondary together that way, a couple linebackers together, your pass rush, your interior guys. So, you know, that's a little bit more of a different way that you can do it. Todd says, thoughts on the addition of void years to contracts? Do you think it's a good idea in general, or do you think it could hurt teams' cap flexibility in the future? I don't like it. Now, I said after looking at those things on restructures that I think if you do it to a limited extent, it's fine. What you can't have are these overlaps, like where I talked about the Saints before, where you're going to have over $30 million in expiring void years, potentially hitting the cap in 1 year. You know, it hurts you with leverage on players. I just look at it as a negative. To me, it's you should never, if you have a contract with void years in it, those are the kind of deals you probably shouldn't restructure, because you already built in your own restructure by doing those void years in the first place. I'll give you some exceptions, maybe for a Dak Prescott or something like that. I don't think they're a good idea. I think it's better to work within the framework of your contract. And if you want to get to 5 years on a deal, try to negotiate 5 years. Don't just give in and do a 3-year deal. Say, all right, well, we'll just throw voids in there for five and we'll worry about it in year three. Because at that point in time, you know, if you've gotten that far in the deal, it's like, well, you're kind of screwed. You're in a bad position, you know, and certainly when you're doing it early in deals, you're putting money into seasons where those guys probably are not going to be on the team. The reason that I say when you do it for a lot of people, you run the risk of then having a lot of dead money. Again, if you do it for one person, okay, that's not a big deal. But when you're just doing it with everyone and you start to plot out what are your dead money probabilities each year based on your roster construction and your contract construction, your numbers are going to be very high for your team. And it's very hard to win when you do have those huge dead money numbers in seasons. Mazer says, would you be able to give a Lions cap review now into the future? I believe Mike Disner is relatively new. I don't really have much on them right now. But yeah, Disner was in Arizona, and then he moved to Detroit 2 years ago, I think. Do a lot of incentives. You know that? That was something I think that was a carryover from Arizona. Right now, it's still kind of too new to say as to, I think, where they're headed with everything salary cap-wise. I think it's still too early because you just switched general managers. You know, I think they've been a little too bullish in free agency on some guys. Some of it was understandable. You know, the Trey Flowers deal, it is what it is. That's what happens in free agency when you get very limited amount of pass rushers or guys who might be a pass rusher and you want to make a jump at them. You know, that's basically what you have to do. Some of the things like the Jamie Collins thing, that's a general manager's decision. I don't know how much I'm going to take out on that. So I think you just wait to see what happens this year and next year. And I really think that's where you get the better view as to where they are as a team, because everything works kind of in concert. You know, everything works together. When you have a different general manager and you have the same guys doing contracts, you don't know if things are going to kind of continue the same or if things are going to change. Sometimes they do. You know, a lot of times the contract guys work very independent, I think, of the general managers. And you can see that when teams switch general managers and the patterns stay consistent with some of the contract stuff. But that's not always the case. Some of the people take an active role in it. Sometimes it's not even the general manager taking an active role in it. Sometimes it's that the last general manager maybe did. And now new general manager is giving you more freedom. He's saying, okay, what would you like to do different? What do you think we could do different? And you get to change things up. So I think you're going to get a better feel next year for the way the whole team is going to work and how those things will function. Okay, let's see. Last set of questions here. I think there's only another four or so. Okay, New Jet City. Thoughts on how the Jameson Crowder contract situation ends up with the Jets, assuming Crowder doesn't agree to a salary reduction, is ultimately released. What would you guess his salary would be? I think he's probably looking at $5 million if he leaves the Jets, maybe a little bit less than that, maybe $4 million. I think the Jets will offer him $5.5 million. I think the issue is, and this is one of the reasons why if I was Crowder, maybe I wouldn't take the deal with the Jets. I think what the Jets are doing is they're looking to go to $5.5 million And that makes him much, much, much more tradable at the trade deadline, where the, you know, the other team is going to have to pick up like $3.5 million on salary. And if I'm Crowder, I probably look at that and say, well, you know what? If all things considered, if I'm going to be a free agent next year, I'd rather pick and choose where I'm going to go right now, find the best system for me, find the best fit for me, even if it's going to be a little bit less money. I control where I go. You don't control where I go. And that gives me maybe the best opportunity to cash in next year in free agency. Now, it doesn't mean that you won't. I mean, Golden Tate was a dud in Philadelphia and he cashed in free agency with the Giants. But I'd be a little bit worried if I was Crowder on having a situation where I'm taking a pay cut to stay in New York, and then New York goes and flips me to a fringe playoff team. I don't know what that type of team would be. You know, the Colts. Colts are more than a fringe playoff team, but they need players. They need offensive talent there. You know, getting flipped there and then not doing that well, not connecting with the quarterback, and then having that actually impact me more negative the following year when I go to free agency. Because this is his last chance to earn a big contract or just to earn a, you know, a bigger contract. So I think that those are things that I'd want to consider if I was him. The People's Champ. Titans' potential cap situation going forward in this offseason and next few years due to signing Julio or other potential free agents or third wave guys. I think they're fine. You know, when I looked at their future cap, when I wrote that article, I thought the fact that even though they had 3-3 this year, I thought their future cap numbers were going to put them in a position to where they could bring on Jones. That they had enough wiggle room to where they would be able to do that. And even if you look at their, I'm just going to pull up their 2022 roster here. So we have them with about $10 million in cap room. Now I don't know how many guys we have on there, but you know, in terms of the draft picks, I'm not even sure where they are. But you look at this roster and you go to their 2022 cap page. Just look at the amount of money that is saved by releasing different players. Derrick Henry, $9 million. Saffold, $10.5 million. Jenkins, $7 million. So, I mean, they have a lot of flexibility with the top of their roster next year for players that you want to release. Now, I know you're going to say, well, you're crazy. You're talking about Derrick Henry. I'm just talking about a position that breaks down. He hasn't broken down. Maybe he won't. Maybe he is going to be the exception to the rule. But there are areas for them to create cap room through just regular straight roster cuts next year if they want to. So I think that they're okay. You know, and Julio, he falls into that same category, right? If he doesn't do well, you move on and you save 9.5. Cut him a check for 2. It's probably got an offset. He goes and signs somewhere. He's probably going to sign for more than 2. So you're going to get that money back the following year. You know, so I think they're okay. Jake says, how do you rate Belichick overall as a GM, trade, signings, drafts? That's a good question. You know, they're good with things they do. They're very good at setting a tone, setting examples, and sticking through with it, you know, until this year. One of the things where people would talk about the quote-unquote Patriot way, the Patriot way truly went through that entire organization. I love when teams do that. Consistency as an organization with your decision-making, consistency with your approach to personnel, consistency with your approach to the draft, I think that is always something that pays off for you in the long run. It's way better than teams that are haphazard. As for stuff that they've done, I don't know. You know, some of the trades, you know, the Sanu trade was downright awful. Just awful. The Antonio Brown signing was awful. I think there was a period where if you go back to the post ACL, right? That's what Brady tore ACL in 2008. I think if you go in the 2009 to like 2012, 2013, whatever those years were, you know, that are there, I think some of the decisions they made actually may have cost them another championship. I don't know. They just do some things like he does fall in love with the Chad Johnson players. You know, we get into this that the Belichick can do no wrong. All right. Kind of deal, you know, because people look back at Randy Moss and they go, wow, could you imagine, you know, how they stole Randy Moss or how they stole Wes Welker? Even something like a signing of a Revis or Gilmore when Gilmore had that spectacular year 2 years ago. And I think people look at those, and sometimes you look past some of the other ones then that aren't as good. You know, the Chad Johnson, the Sean Ellis's. Then that's all from that era that I'm talking about. Where I think sometimes that there's probably overconfidence in some of the stuff that they do. But I don't know. I mean, it's hard to really say that they're, you know, I know that that doesn't sound good, but it's weird. They're a weird team. Like, I can't look at them and say that anything that they do, maybe not anything that they do, but a lot of the things that they do, I almost feel like they wouldn't work for other teams. They were successful for basically 20 years operating that way. Last year, it fell apart without Tom Brady. It's always going to be something that hangs over Belichick if he doesn't get this back on track this year. You know, I think they did a very good job in terms of, you know, drafting potential successors for Tom Brady and then being able to trade them when they realized that Brady was still good to go. That's something that most teams wouldn't do. But a lot of the stuff with the really picking on the salaries, pushing on the lower cost players, pushing on the you're here to win rings, not to make money kind of mantra, I don't think that would fly almost anywhere else. And I don't know if it would work. You know, if you take Brady off of those teams, does it work? I'm not saying replace Brady with the Darnold. I'm saying take Brady off those teams and replace him with like a Carson Palmer kind of quarterback. Would the Patriots have been successful? How successful would they have been? I think they would have had to move off a lot of the things they did. Which is what happened this year, right? They went into free agency is insane what they did. Absolutely insane. If that was any other general manager in the league that did the stuff the Patriots did in free agency, they would be getting ripped on left and right. Instead, it becomes like genius that they decided that, well, yeah, kind of, if you really look in deep in the numbers, this Nelson Aguilar signing makes sense. And you know, back in the day, Gronkowski and Hernandez were a deadly duo. Maybe deadly is not the right word. You know, they were a great duo of the dual tight ends. So that's why they have Henry and Smith. It's going to be a great duo. It's like, come on. Could you imagine if the Jets spent $25 million on two tight ends? It'd be a joke. It's a weird thing to say, well, you wait and see. I'm really curious to see how they make out, you know, this year. But I think it's an up and down thing. I think there's a lot of things that you can pick on, but I think it's just a very different organization, and you can't argue with their success. I just don't know if without the quarterback there, if they would be able to run the same kind of stuff. And the fact that they did what they did this offseason, I think leads me to believe that a little bit more. Last question. Jack says, how is individual revenue by teams earned? Is it pooled collectively, then split evenly? What about jersey sales, visiting playoff teams, yada, yada, yada? So basically the way that it works, as far as I understand, I don't really get big into this side. But the big media TV contracts, that's distributed evenly among 32 teams. Everything else is yours, right? You negotiate your own radio rights with your local markets. And I shouldn't say just the national television package, your national radio package, your NFL network, your NFL internet, all your different NFL properties. That stuff is pooled and split evenly. But your local revenues, your ticket sales, all that stuff, that's yours to keep. So that stuff impacts the salary cap, but that's one of the reasons why you would hear teams like the Cincinnati Bengals, for example, complain that they're not on the same level as the Dallas Cowboys. You know, the Dallas Cowboys would go out and sign their own merchandising deals. The Dallas Cowboys have a giant stadium. Even before they had a giant stadium, they would always be able to, you know, pack the house and charge more for their tickets, whereas the Bengals did not. There is a difference. And this year, you know, one of the things that I talked about was there would be a stark contrast because you had teams that were putting some fans in the stadium, like a significant amount, not like just a handful, to where that was actually a big difference in how much money those teams were losing compared to the other teams in the league. But it's the league-wide stuff is split, but on the local end of it, that's yours. That's your business. That's what you're doing as a franchise. It goes into the pool for the salary cap consideration, but it's not like what Dallas gets in ticket sales, as far as I know, gets distributed to Cincinnati. what Dallas does, Dallas does. What Cincinnati does, Cincinnati does. Maybe there's a portion of it that goes into a pool, but you know, in general, that's how it works out. So most of the stuff just comes from the national thing. But again, that's not like an area that I jump into too often. So anyway, all right, I think that does it for me. So everyone have a great week. If you have any questions, you let me know during the week. If you have any topics that you're interested in me covering next week, you can let me know. And hopefully I should be, let's see, what's the date? Next week is the 18th. Definitely be around next week. The following week, probably a bit more iffy. But we should be back again. So everyone have a great week, and I will talk to you all again soon.